You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
As we kick off the new year, this being the first full trading week that we've had this year, I thought it might be interesting to take a look at what the rest of the year could have in store. South Africa is an emerging market. We've seen emerging markets be on the receiving end of a lot of pressure, depending on when you're looking at emerging markets. And I thought, why not take a look at the emerging market picture for the 2025 year and beyond? Joined on the line by Peter Kent, who is the co-head for emerging market fixed income at 91, to take a look at their latest emerging markets outlook that they've put up for 2025. Good evening, Pete. Lovely to catch up with you. Let's start with last year. Big election year, more than 50% of the world's GDP is going to the polls. We came out of that from a markets perspective relatively unscathed. I mean, it could have been significantly worse from a volatility perspective, but it seems as though we've kind of made it through the bulk of that with all the major economies not really surprising us here. Other than, of course, the US, how do you reflect on what happened last year from an emerging market perspective?
Thanks, Jimmy, and thanks for having me. I think the first thing I would say on all of the elections last year, we called it the year of the ballots, and it lived up to its billing. You know, if you recall, South Africa had its election in the middle of the year. India was around the same time, same to Mexico, the UK, the US. Closer to home, we had Botswana, we had Mozambique. And I think the overriding observation that we saw last year was the incumbents got absolutely slammed. So, you know, either incumbents lost a decent amount of their majority or it completely flipped and went against the incumbent. And given the uniform nature of that phenomenon, you've got to think that there's an underlying reason for it. It's you know, obviously every election has its local issues, but you have to sort of think that there's a wider issue at play here. And I think and sort of market commentary, and which I tend to agree with, is inflation played a major role. You know, and I think it's a little bit of a hat tip to central banks and monetary policy and trying to keep inflation under control. It's actually a virtue for politicians, because if you see inflation eat away at people's pay, they struggle for food, they struggle, you know, to live, they just notice prices going up and they want change. And I would say that is probably the biggest reflection on last year, which interestingly is quite informative on, you know, Trump version 2 policies this year. If you think that inflation was such a bogey for the incumbents last year, I think all politicians need to be very careful about stoking inflation this year.
Pete, let's stick with the bogeys. Trump coming back into office in the U.S., I mean, I don't even know how we described it the first time around. Americans went ahead and did it again. And that is going to bring about a lot of, it already has brought about a lot of volatility in the markets. He hasn't officially even been sworn in. And yet we've already seen him make sweeping pronouncements and statements that have rocked markets in the first trading week, effectively, of the year. What does Trump mean for the outlook or the risk to the outlook for emerging markets?
So I would say a couple of things. First of all, like, you know, his first term, I think the sentiment at the time was, you know, he sort of squeaked through and there wasn't really a mandate. It definitely feels that, you know, when you look at the numbers, the fact that he got the popular vote, it does feel, you know, when you speak to my American colleagues, it does feel like there is a mandate this time round. So, you know, whatever we had the first time, this time is going to be supercharged. And this time he's going to be more prepared. You know, the first time around, you got a sense and, you know, sort of reading on the subject, they kind of started at the inauguration, whereas this one feels like it's been planned for some time. And they're already, as you say, they're already sort of initiating policy proposals. I think the one thing as a market participant, I would say the kind of economic advisors he's put around him, and the Treasury Secretary he's put around them are really sensible people. And, you know, whilst the threat of tariffs is one that's difficult for emerging markets who rely on trade, you know, he has some sensible people around him. So we lean on that. The other point I would make as well is this inflation phenomenon. Tariffs are potentially inflationary, especially on consumer goods. So if the Trump administration does an across-the-board 10% tariff for all countries and a 50-60% tariff on China on all products, which he mentioned on the campaign trail, you can bet your bottom dollar that's going to be inflationary. So that is opposed to that point that I mentioned first up, is no politician wants inflation here. So I think that is a constraint, first of all, on the tariff side of things. The other side, which is potentially unsettled markets, is fiscal. You know, developed markets have been borrowing. I need to be careful here, like a drunken sailor, in all honesty, for the last 3 or 4 years since COVID. And I think there was a big fear in the market that we were going to get, you know, it was bipartisan, you know, whether Democrat or Republican, you saw the deficit widen in the U.S. It was kind of at eye-watering levels, anywhere between sort of 6 and 10% over the last couple of years. And there was a fear that he was going to borrow even more as a sort of populist type agenda. Those sort of sensible people that he's got around him, I would call slightly fiscally hawkish. I think they kind of realize that they are at the end of the road of like sort of borrowing and spending. So, you know, they will look to mitigate that through cost reductions, through taxes. But, you know, you do have to sort of nod to history and think about Reagan. Reagan had this kind of agenda too. And the deficit did widen during his regime. You know, he sort of expected cutting taxes would result in more growth, which would actually result in more taxes, and sort of promised fiscal deficits to come down. That didn't happen under Reagan. So whilst you are hearing slightly sort of hawkish reverberations from the Trump administration on fiscal, you know, the proof is in the pudding there. So the market was worried about fiscal, lots of spending. They're worried about tariffs. And then they're very worried about dollar. The dollar is really, really important for emerging markets. You know, it's the other side of all of our currencies. You know, if you think about South Africa, dollar rand, for example, close to 19 over the last couple of days. If the dollar rallies, it's very hard for other emerging markets to do well from a currency perspective. It's a very high hurdle. And the U.S. economy is doing exceptionally well. It's doing exceptionally well from a productivity perspective. It's completely outpacing Europe, outpacing the U.K. There's no real competition coming from developed markets in terms of economic performance. So the dollar is doing well against those currencies. In fact, emerging markets are actually probably putting up the biggest defense. You know, we're the ones sort of growing at a reasonable pace and actually sort of defending somewhat against this really, really strong dollar. So I think that as an emerging market investor is perhaps the biggest worry that I have, is whether this America first, whether the dynamism and growth of the U.S. economy is something that's going to persist, and it's just going to be a hell of a hurdle to clear as an emerging market investor.
Pete, why is it that, and this is just off the back of what you've said around the dollar and countries like the United States increasing their debt ceilings and going into more debt and all of that, why is it that emerging markets are not allowed to do that? Why is it that only developed countries can come out, print money as they see fit, and say we're going to put it towards infrastructure, but when an emerging market does that, emerging market currencies get devalued? Isn't that how emerging markets become developed economies?
Yeah, it's a great point, and I would cast your eye on the UK at the moment. You know, the UK used to be a reserve currency. The pound used to be, sterling used to be a reserve currency. It used to be the reserve currency. You know, when you look at what the UK is doing at the moment and how sterling is traded and how gilts are trading at the moment, you know, they're kind of losing that luxury at the moment. And it's because they run a massive current account deficit and a capital account deficit. Now, that's a technical term, but essentially what it means is, from both a trade perspective and a capital perspective, they rely on the kindness of strangers. And, you know, the kindness of strangers is often a function of economic prospects in your country. And if you don't have any, you don't get that kindness, and your currency has to devalue to attract it. You know, the best way to attract capital is to make things hell of a cheap. And that's kind of what's happening in sterling at the moment. Now, the U.S. has this significant privilege of being a global reserve currency. It has the world's largest liquid, deepest markets, so it can cater for that. You know, South Africa couldn't be a reserve currency. Its markets and the supply of rand is just not enough, right? But then the U.S. has got these strong institutions. It's got strong rule of law, and people use that liquidity, the strong credibility from the Fed in preserving the value of the dollar. And as a result of that, they have this reserve currency status. Now, it's an interesting point, because we as emerging markets look at this as a privilege. But the corollary of this, the other side of the coin of this, is exactly Trump's agenda. So what you have to do to become a global reserve currency like the dollar you've just got to export a bunch of dollars to the world. And how do you do that? You do that by essentially outsourcing all of your industry and all of your manufacturing to the rest of the world. So the rest of the world gives you product and you give them dollars and they use those dollars as reserves. Right? Now that has been the sort of chimerica, the China-America relationship post-WTO. That's been the relationship for 20, 25 years, and it's not worked for the U.S., right? Their sort of industrial sector, their rust belt has been deprecated. You know, there's a lot of sort of middle Americans looking for work, you know, trying to sort of figure out what life means to them. And that's kind of part of his campaign. That's part of his manifesto. So when I sort of mention up front that the dollar is perhaps my biggest concern as emerging market investor, just like inflation is diametrically opposed to what Trump is trying to do because of the political risk, a strong dollar is diametrically opposed. If he wants to reconstitute that manufacturing sector in sort of middle America, he needs the dollar to weaken, right? He needs to essentially reverse this 25-year phenomenon. So that sits in the back of my mind. You know, on a sort of near-term cyclical basis, the dollar looks very strong. You've got high cash rates. The economy is performing well. There's the threat of tariffs. But I know in the back of my mind, it really doesn't help Trump's agenda of trying to reindustrialize the U.S. So in the back of my mind, I'm sitting here going, I wouldn't be surprised to see the dollar actually depreciate over the year, but I'm struggling to see the path to it.
Pete, where do the emerging market opportunities lie then? If China's going through its own mess, the U.S. is focused on the U.S., Europe is going its own way, where do the opportunities lie and how do we make the most of it from an investor point of view?
Well, it's exactly that, right? It's exactly what you say. We have had a world for the last 20, 25 years where, you know, there's been global cooperation. We've had world trade where people have optimized their sort of supply chains to the fifth decimal place across the globe to sort of like cheapen products. We're unbundling all of that. And, you know, Trump isn't the person. COVID, it was almost happening pre-COVID. COVID was a real wake-up call to all of us that, you know, you need things of national importance manufactured locally, because the moment there's trouble, people shut their borders and don't send things across borders. So you're essentially having a rewiring of supply chains, right? And those supply chains are going to be brought onshore. You know, the U.S. is saying it from a national security perspective. They need steel production. They need manufacturing production. You know, they need to make their own weapons and their own syringes and all these kinds of things. So there's a rewiring of supply chains. So sure, the last 20 years is not the blueprint for the next decade. You know, the last 20 years has been one where essentially China produced everything and, you know, we all bought it quite cheaply. So there's a rewiring of the supply chain that's happening. And everyone thinks it's bad for emerging markets because China's not going to grow and China's not going to produce anymore. But that stuff still needs to be produced. And it ain't going to be produced by America tomorrow. And that stuff still requires raw materials. It still requires commodities. So what I think people are doing is they're sort of conflating the problem here. They're conflating a rewiring of the supply chains and a change in the last 20 years in something that's bad for emerging markets. It's just different. I think it's different, right? So we've got a world where it's going to be more inflationary. There's going to be more demand for stuff. You're going to need some risk premium in your assets. I mean, that is emerging markets for you, right? Like that's emerging markets for the last 20, 30 years. We've had to deal with inflation. We've had to deal with political risk. You know, we've had to deal with exporting commodities, these kind of things. So I think emerging markets are being sort of unfairly punished by global investors. I think they deserve a place at the investment table. They're a cyclical asset. You know, the globe is growing. You know, the probability of recession is sort of decreasing. China, whilst it's not growing well at the moment, you know, China's been sitting on a deflationary bust for the last couple of years with what they've done to the housing market there. You know, they're sitting on a housing market sort of bust at the moment. And if they weren't careful, they were going to end up as Japan. They were going to end up as the periphery where they didn't ease policy enough. They've woken up to that risk. So the last 6 months, they've started to ease. So you don't sit here going, wow, you know, China's really sort of solved its secular problems and China's like a fantastic sort of top-down place to invest. But certainly the worst-case scenario has been managed. So, you know, it's not going to be a drag on emerging markets. And whilst China struggled the last few years, emerging markets haven't noticed it because we've kind of rewired our supply chains. we've rewired our sort of economies. So I think emerging markets offer you premium. They offer you value in a world where there's not a lot, whether it's equities or bonds. And I think they offer you a diversifier. And I cannot remember in my 25-year career of investing a time where diversity is more of a virtue. With this kind of world that you mentioned right at the beginning, where who knows what is happening, do you really want your eggs in one basket? You want diversity just to avoid the losers, to be honest. And I think emerging markets features quite prominently in that.
I couldn't have put it better myself. Emerging markets is the place to be going into 2025. Investors out there that want to bring their dollars, euros and other currencies to emerging markets. South Africa's here. We're ready. We're open to receiving these funds. I think we'll leave the conversation there, Pete. Thanks so much for the time and for the insights. That's Peter Kent, who is the co-head of Emerging Markets Fixed Income at 91 on their Emerging Market Outlook for 2025.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.